Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
What a gross first half of basketball for both teams. Jason Tatum 0-for, unbelievable, to the point where you thought he was hurt.
I didn't score in the first half. That's unacceptable. I had to play better.
Dale Arnold.
Really what we saw was the Tyler Hero game. I mean, that was a monster game.
The superhero was born last night.
Rich Keefe.
One thing I would have done, though, if I was the Celtics, is not turned it over almost every possession in the fourth quarter.
The damage is done, my friend.
Dale and Keefe, middays.
Another down 3-1. You could say goosed, you could say porked, screwed, whatever you want to say.
Dunsky.
On the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
Hour number three, Dale and Keith, Sports Radio WEEI. How bad was the Celtics' three-point 112-109 loss last night to the Miami Heat down in the Eastern Conference Finals? They now trail the best-of-seven series 3-1. How bad was it, Rich? At 6:02 this morning, Jermaine Wiggins on the Greg Hill Show called for Danny Ainge to be fired.
Yeah, I'm not going there just yet.
No.
I know it is a take, though. It's a hot, wiggy take. You know, maybe you should have saved it for high noon. I'm not going to go there. You know, you lose in a game four. I'm not going to fire the president of basketball operations for it, who I think has done a pretty good job overall. But anyway, I don't think it's him. I think the coach has been outcoached in the series, and I think some of your top players have been outplayed by their top players. It's been a tough combination, but that's why you're down 3-1. But I'm not blowing it up. Like, I don't think anytime your team doesn't win the whole thing, you shouldn't just get rid of everybody. That's not how it works.
Well, this was Wiggy's 6 hours early high noon hot take at 6:02 this morning.
Boy. They should have never hired Danny Ainge.
Okay.
We love Danny Ainge as a player,
right?
We give him too many passes. If Danny Ainge was Danny Johnson, just an average NBA exec, he would have been fired years ago.
All right.
Do you think Danny Ainge should be fired?
I think so.
Okay. Whoa. Okay.
No, it's stupid. I don't even.
6:02 this morning.
Well, so listen, I've done that show, and you need to have, they call it the lead at 6:00.
Yeah.
So basically, it's everybody has a hot take, and you try to out hot take each other, and so
Wiggy usually out hot takes everybody.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that's why he's good on that
show.
It's
like the same four, though. He just cycles through trade Chara, trade Bergeron, fire Brad Stevens, extend Cam.
But now he's morphed it into Danny Ainge because he's like, the Stevens one, I was starting to get some people to agree with him.
It's more of just a Mad Libs. It's like, choose verb, fire, hire, extend, insert name.
Fire, hire, trade.
Right.
That's what you should do. And so I'm not getting rid of Danny Ainge. Like, name me, besides the Kendrick Perkins trade, which was now, God, how many years ago was that? How many trades has Danny Ainge lost? The guy, he usually pants his people when it comes to trade. He does a pretty good job with trades. He also took Jason Tatum, or he traded out of the number one pick to get Jason Tatum.
When we mocked him, remember? We all mocked him. Oh, yeah, sure, you were going to take this guy anyway, right?
Well, I mean, if you were going to do that, I feel like you kind of knew something. But the point is, he could have taken Markelle Fultz. Everybody was saying Markelle Fultz is the number one pick.
Right.
And he ended up with Jason Tatum. So that worked out pretty well. I hated the Jaylen Brown pick at the time. Now, obviously, he still would have been better off with Jamal Murray, but again, you can't do everything. But Jaylen Brown ended up being a good player. That he took a shot at Kyrie Irving. I thought it was the shot to take. It didn't work out. But rather than having to blow the entire thing up, you were able to somehow turn that into Kemba Walker the next year. So I'm good with it. The Gordon Hayward injury, which has kind of really affected his entire run here with the Celtics, also not a Danny Ainge problem. So I'm going to say sorry to Wiggy, no on the Danny Ainge thing. I'm also not going to can Brad Stevens, but I think you can say, all right, you have more talent in the series. You're the better team in this series, and you're probably going to lose in five games. What the hell happened?
Well, let's start pregame, okay? Because Marcus Smart is doing one of these interviews, and by the way, they're forced. They're kind of silly. I'll start talking to you 6 feet apart, then you go out and shoot. You know, and she's like trying to make him go out. No. Go.
He's like,
go
I'd ahead. Rather just do the interview.
No, no. Like, go, so they got go him, shoot.
They got like a wireless mic, and he's got like Beats like by Dre on
Bose or something. Yeah, on
and
his
then
head.
So he's out there trying to warm up, and as Rachel Nichols is talking to him, the shots that he was working on were from
you never
like
see him.
Well, no, but the ones that they did show until they panned way out, he was shooting from roughly the right block,
right,
putting up these little left-handed jumpers. And the first one, while she was talking to him, it's probably like 6 feet away, airballed it. Like, just whiffed on the rim as he's like, but I don't even blame him because you're like conducting an interview. Like, it's very odd. Try having a conversation with somebody as you're like putting up a bunch of shots. It's very weird.
Here was Marcus Smart's high noon hot take during the pregame show last night.
Not every day or every moment is going to be where everybody on that team agrees with you, likes you. And that's okay, because sometimes things need to be done and said, and it's going to take somebody to do it. And that's me. I'm not afraid to do it, even just to get my teammates going, get this team going, if that's what it takes.
Kudos to me.
Yeah, it does seem like he's taking credit for the Game 3 win prior to the Game 4 loss, in which he was the worst player on the team.
I was going to say, did he say anything before last night's game to get the team going?
Yeah, I don't know. And then it's one thing I don't even mind. Like, he's been there the longest. He is obviously a very emotional guy. He, you know, he does a lot of the dirty things and all that crap. But it's one thing to, you know, if you want to call guys out and, you know, have like an airing of grievances, like have like a mini Festivus there. Like, that's fine. But then when you're kind of taking all the credit for the win there, and then you follow it up with, what was he, 1 of 8 from three? Yeesh. He had a ton of turnovers in the fourth quarter. Jason Tatum was really bad in the first half, and we'll get to him. But he at least turned it around and was really good in the second half and carried the scoring in the second half. From start to finish, Marcus Smart was the worst player on the court last night. And so is he going to take any of the blame for that, or is he gonna just be like, hey, remember when I rallied the guys after game two, got their face, did a pretty good job there, didn't I?
Well, if he was the worst player on the court, and I don't disagree with you on that, Brad Stevens and anybody with two eyes certainly knew who the best player on the court was last night.
Hero's shot making tonight was, you know, in addition to the things we just talked about that were our own issues, was the difference in the game. Jimmy was great late. Adebayo was his typical self. And Dragic made some big plays, but Hero was ridiculously good tonight. That ball, the rim must have looked like the ocean to him.
I mean, he was a stud. He was so good, and he looks like he's going to be a great player. It was the best game of his NBA career by far, and it came at the right time. They needed that. He was great, but I don't know. Is there not only is there things maybe the Celtics can do differently defensively against him, but maybe even when they're on offense. Tyler Hero is not going to be the world's greatest defensive player, and they can kind of hide him in the zones a little bit. They've been running a ton of zone, but just like we said with Duncan Robinson, who can be a real weapon and just rain threes, but he stinks on defense. So you kind of go at him, and then you can get him out of the game. Game one, they got him into foul trouble, and he was useless. Last night, he kind of did it to himself. He was just missing shots, and he was no good. But I wonder, can't you put a little bit more pressure on, make it more uncomfortable for a Hero? He just had a game where it seemed like he could do whatever he wanted.
One of the things Chris Mannix told us earlier today from Sports Illustrated, he joined us in the first hour of today's program, is that Tyler Hero was, as you just heard Brad say, he was unbelievable. Career high, 37 points, and they won by three. I mean, chances are real good you're not going to get another 37-point performance out of Tyler Hero. He'll be good. He'll be probably very good. He won't be that. And yet it took a 37-point career best performance to beat the Celtics by three. If you're looking for silver linings, and there ain't many here.
I guess that's one. And the other thing I would say is, though, a couple of their streaky guys are Duncan Robinson and Jay Crowder, and they were a combined 1 of 14 from the floor.
And it didn't seem I could even remember the one.
Oh, yeah. No, you wouldn't. Right. It was a three by Crowder.
Crowder,
it was early or whatever. But still, those guys, not that they're great by any means. Again, Robinson has one specific skill set, but you're going to get a little bit. So maybe
like
Tyler,
Liam Neeson?
Yeah, just like him. So Tyler Hero is going to be worse, but those guys will probably be better. I think Jimmy Butler can easily duplicate what he did. Goran Dragic can probably duplicate, if not be better, maybe a little bit more efficient. And then all series long, they've had no answer for Bam Adebayo.
The big four, I mentioned earlier, it's like the Heat are a four-man team. Tyler Hero, 37. Jimmy Butler, 24. Dragic, 22. Adebayo, 20. And they were worlds better than the Celtics' top four.
They were in the game. Yeah, I think overall I still like the Celtics for better, but these guys are playing better. And I don't think anybody really predicted Hero to have this type of game. You knew he was good, and he showed some flashes of it even this series and certainly throughout the playoffs. But last night was just sort of the icing on the cake. He was that good. Jason Tatum, think about it. If he just has a mediocre first half.
Not an awful first half.
We're talking about one of the great playoff performances ever. He had 28 points in the second half. So what was he in line for? A 40-point night easy? Like, if he just goes through and has a decent enough first half, he probably drops 40. And it wasn't the case. You didn't know what was going on with him. And I thought what was pretty damning, too, and this is on the players, but I think you can also lump Brad into this as well. Like, if he's not hurt, and he clearly wasn't because he shows up
not
in
the
second half.
Not the way he showed up, yeah.
Like, what the hell was that, though? And Kemba Walker took more shots in the first half than Tatum did. Jaylen Brown took more shots than he did. Marcus Smart took more shots than he did. Like, he's your best player, and he's your best scorer. And yet, he just goes 0 for 6, was settling for a lot of threes, and just didn't seem to be engaged. Really, none of them seemed to be engaged. It was kind of ugly for both teams. Like, they took four days off.
The first half was horrible.
Yeah, you hadn't seen basketball that bad, that sloppy. Just the missed shots and the turnovers. Like, what are we watching? Like, it was gross.
Brad, post-game, was asked about Jason Tatum and that uncharacteristic, horrible start to the game for him.
It's basketball. I don't want to oversimplify it, but we've all had nights where you just don't feel like it's going for you. You go into the break, or you've seen great players do that, at least, where they go into the break and they can just reset, see one go through the net, and then they go, you know. And I think that that's all Jason needed to see. He was way more assertive, way more aggressive in the second half, but probably because he felt a lot better about him. For whatever reason, I thought in the first half, just struggling to find a net. And then it only takes a great player once or twice to get confidence rolling.
Everybody around here has been playing the blame game since last night.
Just basketball, is what he's saying?
It's basketball. You know, it's
not to oversimplify it, but it's just basketball.
How many great players do you think, especially when their team's down 2-1, put up a goose egg in the first half? Does that happen very often? He says it happens. Brad must know.
Not very often.
I can't remember too many times where it happens. And also, maybe as a
player on your team.
Yeah, and he's like, and to Brad's point, and the one that I agree with him is, when it's a great player and they're struggling, all they need to see is it go through the hoop once or twice. Well, then, I don't know, maybe design a few plays specifically for Tatum and try to get him involved because you know that he's going to have to carry the scoring.
Well, it's funny because at halftime, the broadcast team said that. And they did. They had a play for Tatum right off the bat to open up the second half, and he picked up a foul within like six
mm-hmm.
seconds.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, we got it now. We're going to get him going. Oh, whistle.
Yeah.
I couldn't even complain about Scott Foster and Tony Brothers last night.
I mean, there was a couple things, but no. I mean, that wasn't you're not going to go back to it and say
no.
That's the reason why they lost. I mean, you know, Gordon Hayward's fouling people with his face, apparently, but whatever. You know, there's kind of, you know, iffy calls on both sides, so I'm not going to go there, but. It seemed like they weren't ready to play, like to start the game.
And I agree with you. They and the Heat, for that matter, in the first half, they didn't look ready to play either. Neither team looked particularly ready. So now the question is, if it's a simple fix, Chris Mannix talked about it. You've talked about it. You guys know a lot more basketball than most. Simple fix. Be aggressive. Go to the hoop. Don't settle for threes. You know, pound the paint, which they did in game three. They just decided game four, we're not interested. If it's that simple a fix, I mean, I can't imagine Brad is in the huddle last night saying, now, fellas, just settle. Don't go to the hoop. No, just stay out there. Fog it up for every... He had to have been telling them that, didn't he?
I mean, he obviously gives all these guys the green light to shoot threes whenever they want because that's not a new thing for them. You know, ever since he's been here, guys just launch. Like, that's just kind of what the... Sort of what the new NBA is, sort of what the Celtics are. I mean, they took half of their shots were from three last night. And... The reason why it's frustrating is because you do see when they get into the paint some of the success that they have and how they dominated, what was it, 60 points in the paint in game three? Like, yeah, that is a big difference. And I just think as bad as they played, like as bad as Tatum was in the first half, as bad as Marcus Smart was in the entire game, it's still a one-possession game late, and then they just keep turning it over. I think it's they're just not ready yet to close out games. Again, you look at this series, the three losses were all close late, and they would either have bad shot attempts, turnovers, stupid fouls, not getting rebounds, whatever. How about that one stretch? Would they give up four offensive rebounds in a row to Miami? And Miami didn't even score, but it was just pretty telling of like how the game was going. And it's a lot of it is just kind of being into it, like hustle. Like defense and rebounding is not even a skill-based thing. And that's
want to.
And that's also how a more skilled team loses, is because the other team is doing all of that stuff. And they don't like pucker. They don't freak out late in a game. The reason why I even brought up Brad Stevens and Andy Reid is almost like Andy Reid and Donovan McNabb both were pretty talented. They got a lot of wins there. But then when it was close late, it was like literally throwing up. Like, they literally threw up. And that's what the Celtics seem to do. Whereas on the other side, Tyler Hero and Jimmy Butler and even Dragic, they're like, let's do it. Like, they get even better late in games.
If when the Bruins were eliminated from their bubble up in Toronto by the Tampa Bay Lightning, there was a lot of talk about the changes that Don Sweeney and Cam Neely have to make. Zdeno Chara's got to go. Do you move on from David Krejci? Is Tuukka Rask out? I mean, pretty significant major changes. From the Celtics' perspective, if they lose this game tomorrow night and they get bounced from their Orlando bubble and they fly back home here to Boston, you're not looking at major changes on this team for next year, whenever next year starts,
right?
Apparently in January. I mean, what major changes? You've already made them, haven't you?
Yeah, I think you're kind of committed to this group. Now, yeah. Obviously, it would have to be trades because Gordon Hayward, I assume, is going to opt in, and that's $34 million, his last year of his deal. Kemba Walker, you just signed. You know, you got Brown and Tatum. Daniel Tice is a team option, and it's really cheap, so you're definitely going to bring him back. Robert Williams is on his rookie deal. Grant Williams was obviously a rookie this year. So it's those guys.
This is your team next year, too.
I mean, again, you could make trades. Danny's made plenty of trades in the past. He seems to do them way more in the offseason than he does at the trade deadline during the season. But I think this is the group. And I was actually happy to hear Mannix say he thinks that this group really likes each other. Because I still wondered if there was like a smart Brown thing or like a smart Tatum thing. Like, I didn't know if it was as simple a fix as, all right, Kyrie's gone, so they're all good. But he seems to think they all really like each other. And if they like playing together, then, yeah, this is probably your group. And the other thing, which I definitely agree with him on, the fact that there is no super team, there is no LeBron's Heat or Curry with Durant, like, it's pretty open. I mean, we just saw the Nuggets beat the Clippers. We saw the Bucks lose to the Heat. So, like, it's pretty open. And as long as you have a couple of All-Stars or maybe even three All-Stars, like, you're in good shape. So I know it feels bad right now, but as far as the future is concerned, I think this is probably going to be a pretty similar group we see next year.
I mean, the one guy, and that's probably more based on what happened last night than anything else, the one guy Celtics fans would probably be happy to part company with is Marcus Smart.
No, I think you're wrong on that, Dale. No,
I'm just
Celtics
saying,
fans go nuts for him.
But of your guys, who you're not trading Jalen Brown, Jason Tatum.
No, those are your two.
Kemba Walker's not going anywhere. I mean, I don't think you can trade Gordon Hayward. He's going to opt in. You're not going to be able to wheel him. I mean, who's left? Brad Wanamaker going to get you a lot?
Well, no. But I mean, I guess if you really wanted to, I mean, I don't know if depending on what other team's situations are, or does another team have a Gordon Hayward type where they're just like, you know what, we kind of want to move from this guy. But I don't know. I don't know if Brad would want him gone. I think Danny likes him. I bet he's there. I mean, the whole team essentially is back. So, I think Enes Kanter is a player option. So I'm guessing he'd come back too. Like, it might be very similar. And then you just hope that Brown and Tatum each make that next leap. You know, so Tatum now becomes second team All-NBA, and Jaylen Brown becomes an All-Star, and Kemba can remain an All-Star, and then Romeo Langford and Time Lord actually improve a little bit. And then that might be what you have to bank on.
I just think that in the frustration, the immediate frustration of getting bounced from the playoffs, and again, we're not shoveling the dirt on the coffin here, but
it's done.
It does not look good.
Over.
They have come back from 3-1 deficits, what, twice in their history, I think?
Yeah, no.
None of these guys were born.
I think it was 68 and 81, both against the Sixers.
So, you know, it's probably over. And in the immediate aftermath of getting bounced from the playoffs, fans want everything overhauled. I'm sorry. I don't think it's going to happen here. I just think
this is your team, not just for this year, as you, you know, hopefully continue on in the bubble.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is your team for next year as well.
And it might be one of the first times, too, that Brad Stevens gets, like, the same core back. Like, how many years, and not to make excuses for him, but I think you would like a little continuity on your roster, but go pull up all the different rosters that Brad has had. You know, he's been here 7 years, and think about it. He coached Rondo, Isaiah Thomas, Kyrie Irving, Evan Turner, just up and down the list of all these different players that have been in here. So this might be finally some consistency for him. Oh, by the way, speaking of guys that he has coached, maybe the coaching decision of the series, Eric Spoelstra not playing Kelly Olynyk a second last night. No surprise they won.
And who was the guy who played his first minutes of the entire playoffs?
Oh, I think Solomon Hill, right?
Yeah. He has not played a minute.
Looked like he'd been like hibernating somewhere. I don't know where they found Solomon Hill from, but it looked.
Hey,
when they were like,
did you know he was
forever.
Here?
No,
he's been on the team.
There. Get him in there. Like what has he been up to? But he was a better option than Kelly Olynyk.
Even Eric Spoelstra doesn't know what he's been up to.
He's like, Solomon, get in there.
He forgot he was there. But
he has not gotten a beard trim or a haircut since the quarantine. There's no way. And they have barbers in there. Like, hey, Solomon, go grab. You're on TV tonight.
Freshen up a little bit.
I know there's no fans, but
there are people watching.
He
couldn't have been expecting to play, though, right?
That's true.
What difference does it make? I'm sitting over here all night.
I know. You're still there, though. But I guess, yeah, he's like, oh, me? Who, me? Yeah, get in there.
Yeah, one of those coaches is waving to him, and he's looking over his shoulder.
You're not serious, are you?
Like, yeah, get in there.
Is there somebody behind me you're motioning to?
Go do nothing for 4 minutes on the course.
Which is pretty much what he did.
Yep.
Is this over tomorrow night, or do they push it to a six?
I think it's over. And I've been actually surprised. One of the things I thought we were going to see earlier in the playoffs was, you know, a team gets down and they're like, all right, we can go home after this. And obviously the first round's a little bit different because there was all those sweeps in the Eastern Conference. But, you know, you look at a team like the Denver Nuggets, they've been counted out so many times and they just keep storming back. So teams do seem to actually want to fight and play there. Remember, I thought the Raptors were going to lay down. They didn't. So I don't think necessarily the Celtics are going to lay down, but
I disagree with you.
You think they win?
It is not over tomorrow night.
Mm.
Back to Chris's point, Chris Mannix's point, I think they do like each other. I think they do play for each other. I don't think they want to, you know, whimper out of the bubble in Orlando the way it would appear that would happen if they lose this series 4-1.
Yeah, that would be.
I think they will muster up enough pride. I won't say Celtics pride. That's a terrible movie.
No.
Muster up enough pride to push it to a game six and then lose that one.
Yeah. Show a little bit of life. We'll see. Maybe Marcus Smart will throw another chair or something. That could help.
Or another brick, which is...
Or he'll get thrown out of the game.
Yeah, maybe.
That could happen. 617-779-7937 is the telephone number. We talked a little bit with Peter King about this. Bruce Arians is saying bad stuff, mean stuff about your Rob Gronkowski. We'll talk about that when we come back. It's Dale and Keefe, and it's time to trend.
Dale and Keefe is on from 10 to 2.
That's why you get up in the morning.
Give me the ball and get out of the way.
On WEEI.
We haven't had that many red zone opportunities, and I don't see him running 40 yards past people anymore. If we get him press coverage, hopefully he can. But we brought him in to just play tight end. If that means no catches, that means no catches. I mean, 10 catches, I mean, 10 catches because he's open, and that's where the ball goes. We just fortified a room that with a veteran player, like we did with A.Q. Shipley.
We brought him in to fortify the room, I guess, Rich.
I mean, he's basically A.Q. Shipley.
Holy
Gronk is now A.Q. Shipley. He's a real person, by the way, if you're wondering.
He's a
best
real
man at Pat McAfee's wedding.
A.Q. Shipley was? That's a fun fact there. So he's probably got a good sense of humor. And so basically now Gronk is just like a locker room guy. He's funny. People like him.
Will he stay funny? Will people still like him if he continues to be that part of their team? You know, 2 weeks in, you can still be funny and still be, you know, a fun guy. At about week 10, when he's got like 8 catches on the year or something.
You think he finishes the year?
Yes. I think he'll assuming he doesn't get hurt.
Yeah,
he's not going to quit. He's not going to retire.
Yeah, I don't think he'll do that either. I think he's probably too much of a professional, and that also looks way worse.
Yeah.
Like, years from now, when you're like, oh, yeah, Gronk went back to Tampa and it didn't really work out is one thing. But, oh, Gronk went back to Tampa and then he bailed? That looks so bad that I don't think he'll do that either. But it's been so bad the first 2 games that I think it's worth asking. He has to regret it. I know Peter said he doesn't regret it, or he doesn't think that he regrets it. I think he does. Well, I think he must.
You asked the question about whether or not Gronk regrets, you know, coming out of retirement, and Peter didn't think so. The follow-up question I should have asked, and I wish I'd been smart enough, do you think Bruce Arians regrets bringing Gronk in?
Well, what did they give up for him again? It was like a late-round pick, right? It was a fourth-round pick. Yeah, I mean, he's not even worth a fourth-round pick right now, the way that he's playing, unless it was something, you know. Obviously, you're going to make Tom Brady happy by doing that, and that, you know.
What, is he going to sulk if you don't, though?
Yeah, he did last year. Did you see him?
Yeah, but he sulked for other reasons.
Of course he'll sulk. Yeah, he sulked because they got rid of Antonio Brown.
But if Bruce Arians said, look, sorry, Tom, but, you know, our tight end room is full. We really don't have a spot for him here. Is he then going to go moping around? He just signed a new deal there. He's like happy Tom again.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think they obviously thought he was going to be better than this, but I think Bruce Arians, part of what he's saying is kind of true. Like, the other cut where he's like, we throw to our wide receivers. Like, we have Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. I know Godwin was hurt in week two, but he's like, that's where the targets are going to go, and that's where they should go. But I think what I'm surprised by is just how few targets are going in the direction of Gronk, and then also how bad he's looked. So he doesn't even necessarily deserve more targets. But, yeah, Bruce Arians is probably like, what are we doing? And like, that's a team that had O.J. Howard and Cameron Brate. It's not a team that had Matt LaCosse and Ryan Izzo. So, like, he was just really like a bonus. Like, their team was already good before they got Gronk.
The other thing to keep in mind here is that, you know, when he retired from the Patriots, he retired because he just didn't feel he could do it physically anymore. He was training. He was preparing to play the season. And his body wasn't responding, and he just said, I just can't put myself through this anymore. You know, I'm not the same guy that I used to be, and all those things that athletes ultimately say to themselves when their time is up. So now he's retired. He's off for the year. He's doing wrestling. He's hawking CBD. He's doing all that stuff, and nobody's taking shots at him. Physically, he feels fine. Hey, you know what? This is good. Yeah, what the heck? Tom's going to Tampa. I'll go with him. But the underlying issues he had, the back issues and all that stuff, he didn't have surgery to fix things here.
Yeah.
He just felt better because, you know, he was less wear and tear. Yeah.
I also think that he thought it would be more fun because it wasn't with Belichick anymore.
Probably.
That, I think, was a huge part of it. Like, he could have come back here. He was under, he had their rights where the Patriots had his rights. They had to trade him.
Would they have wanted him back? If he had said to Bill, hey, Bill, I feel pretty good. I want to come back and play again.
Yeah, I bet.
Because it was a, you know, not unsubstantial number.
Yeah, I think, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Belichick was just ready to move on from the whole thing. But I think that...
He didn't hesitate to wheel him, did he?
Well, no, he got something for him. He's right. Like, he's not going to play here, so why, you know, smash my head against the wall? I'll take an asset, something, use the pick. But when you consider what they have at tight end, we didn't know he was going to look this bad. We saw him in 18. We knew he wasn't the same player anymore, but he still came up with a couple of big catches, and you thought, all right, he's going to take a year off. Maybe he comes back. You line him up kind of in the slot a little bit more. You don't have him block as much, and he can still be useful. And we'll also see. I think it'll be more telling. They haven't exactly been in the red zone a whole lot.
Right.
And so if Tampa gets some red zone opportunities this week, next week, maybe we'll be singing a different tune in a month. And we'll be like, Gronk only has 8 catches, but 3 of them are touchdowns and whatever. They're using them, and he gets to spike the ball in the end zone, and he's actually having fun.
We've talked about this with Brady, that we had seen some slippage in his game. We said last year he was making uncharacteristic Tom Brady throws. He was missing even open receivers, not that he had a lot of them, you know, with this receiving core, but even at times he was flat out missing them. Do you think we're seeing more slippage? Because it's inevitable. I mean, I know he seems to have beaten Father Time, but we saw a little bit of a slip last year. You know, he's got 3 picks through the first 2 games. I think we're starting to see what inevitably was going to happen here.
I think we are seeing it a little bit, but also, and Scheim had the stat at the beginning of the season, all the quarterbacks the first year playing for Bruce Arians, and it's a lot of really good quarterbacks.
They throw a lot of picks.
A ton. And everybody piled on Jameis Winston because 30, that number really jumps out at you. Like 30 picks is an insane number of interceptions. But go back to all of his guys, and it was whether Carson Palmer and
Roethlisberger, Andrew Luck,
all these guys, like the most picks they had was that, and then they kind of figured it out then the next year. And we're like, well, Tom may not really have the luxury of sort of waiting a year to really put up the good numbers and everything else. So he might have to be one of those guys that figures it out. Maybe we'll see the first eight games of the year, he throws like 10 or 11 picks. And then the last eight, he throws like two or three. Like
right.
Maybe that'll happen for Brady. Because some of the throws that he made still look like, all right, he's got some zip on it, and yep. It's pretty accurate. But, yeah, the picks were pretty bad. Two out of the three were clearly his fault. 100% were yeah. his fault. But also, there was two brutal drops in the game on Sunday. LeSean McCoy in the end zone, and then some sprinter that they signed up on the sideline hit him in the face. Like, his numbers would have looked a lot better last week. He probably would have had two or three touchdown passes instead of just the one. And also, he didn't have Chris Godwin for game two. So I think he's still pretty good. Like, he's still, to me, in the top 10 of quarterbacks, but it's just, you know, he's not in the top five.
One of those inevitable sports talk radio questions that gets asked, but I'm always curious about this. Is there a bigger gap between Belichick and Arians? Or a bigger gap between Brady and Newton? And I'm talking now, yeah. Not career-wise.
Well, oh, yeah. For right now, and I think that after Sunday night's performance by Cam Newton, I think the bigger gap is, to me, clearly in the
Belichick
coaches.
Belichick and Arians. Yeah.
Yeah, because I think whatever we did, like our preseason rankings, and we did them for quarterbacks. I don't think we did them for head coaches. But whatever they were for quarterbacks, I had, I think, Brady like 6 or 7 and Cam Newton like 12. And that might have even been kind of high. That was, you know... So I think a lot of people had Cam Newton a little bit lower. So Tom Brady's no longer the best quarterback in the league. So he's coming down, and Cam Newton's actually proven that he's healthy, so he's on the rise.
He's probably where we had him at like the halfway point, you know, somewhere 15, 16, somewhere in there. He might have inched close to the top 10 now.
Yeah. Like, again, I had him at 12. I would probably, we could reset it. I'd probably have him close to 10. Meanwhile, yeah. Brady probably went from 6 down to like 8 or something like that. So I think that gap is actually pretty close. And again, not even doing the argument about who's better for a certain team. Just talking about quarterbacks right. in a vacuum, like who would you rather have? I still would rather have Brady for a season, but it's close. Whereas Belichick is still the best coach to me. And still somebody else really proves that that they can take it from him or that he has really slipped. He's still the best coach. Bruce Arians, even though he seems like a boob, he's got a winning record. He's, you know, gotten his teams to the playoffs a couple times when he was in Arizona. He has a decent track record, but he's not a top 5 coach. I don't even know if he's a top 10 coach. He's probably not in the top 10. So he's in the top half, but to me that gap is bigger because, you know, at one point Belichick and Brady were both the best at their respective jobs. Belichick still is. Brady isn't. And part of that's not just the Brady slippage, but it's guys like Wilson and Mahomes and Jackson just kind of you know, being the next wave.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. John is in Norton. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. Great. How are you?
On the Celtics, a couple of points. And Rich, I know you said that in all likelihood the team's going to look very similar next year. And given the big contracts and if you look at the top six, I guess include Tyson there, whatever.
Yeah.
I agree with that, but I think they need to make some changes on the bench. The one thing they don't, they're actually a pretty young team in the grand scheme of things. I think Kemba's the oldest guy, and then
I think Wanamaker's
the older. Wanamaker's the older.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, but you look at some of these other teams like Andre Iguodala and Ibaka and other guys. They need one or two veteran guys that can come off the bench, that, you know, maybe they're not going to score a ton of points or get a ton of rebounds, but they know how to win. They're going to have that energy. They can do a little bit of everything. They're going to help them and not hurt them. They don't have that at all right now. They have nothing. I'd actually like to see them try to get a real veteran point guard off the bench, a guy that's not interested in scoring and shooting. Believe it or not, a guy like Rondo, who's going to facilitate the ball. And he's not going to shoot a lot of shots, but they need veteran presence off the bench. That's something they got to do.
Yeah, you know,
goodbye, Semi Ojeleye.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And who's the French tickler that they're paying that doesn't even dress? I mean, whatever his name is.
Oh, Vincent Poirier?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. The guy that never suits up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's one thing. And the other comment is, I'm giving Brad a little bit of the blame on this, of what's going on. Their top guys are a very, very good foul shooting team, okay? Including Marcus Smart, who's, by the way, like 85, 86%. And he's got to get them to just go to the basket more. I mean, you look at what Miami and Dragic is going to the basket, and Jimmy Butler and these other guys. Now, Bam is a different kind of player.
Yeah.
But they got to go to the basket more, and that's going to open up the 3 points for, you know, a little more open shots. But going to the line, scoring, and then putting the Miami in foul trouble.
Yeah.
I put that on Brad. He's got to change the game plan a little.
All of those things you just listed, we call game three.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, he's also talking about changing the roster a little bit. And I was surprised that they didn't address that a little bit at the trade deadline and try to get somebody, or even like, this isn't the pass first guy, but somebody like Jamal Crawford, who was available. And I know he's super old, but I think there might be something to maybe getting another veteran on the team and on the bench, because he is right. The team is really young. Like, Kemba Walker's not that old. And then, like, Brad Wanamaker, he's older, but he doesn't have, like, the NBA experience.
Right.
Like, he has life experience over some of these guys, but not in the league, whereas Jamal Crawford's been there, done that for everything. So somebody like that, I wonder if they do try to add. Like, remember how important, even though he ended up not playing super well in the playoffs, but Sam Cassell was, like, a nice addition, along with P.J. Brown, back when they won the titles. Like, two veteran guys to complement some of the other younger guys that were, you know, coming off the bench for him.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. It is Keefe's Fantasy Brief that's coming up next. Shime will be chiming in as well. And we'll take a look at Thursday Night Football. It's Dale and Keefe, Sports Radio, WEEI.
Dale and Keefe.
Middays 10 to 2.
On WEEI.
Keefe's gonna give you what you need to know. Talk about who you gotta start, who you gotta sit, gotta let go. When you be like, whoop, whoop. You doing so good, gonna win your league, but you gotta listen to Rich Keefe.
And Shime Time.
In the Fantasy Brief. Rich Keefe is playing like John Clayton up inside the huddle. And he's got an intimate knowledge of the fantasy game, like he and Matthew Berry like to cuddle. If your team got a problem, yo, he'll solve it. Winston Wolfe for this fantasy gauntlet. So pretty pleased with sugar on it. Check out the hook walk.
Shime.
Keefe's gonna give you the info you desire. Who to claim from the waiver wire, so your lineup game is on fire. Put him on the board. Championship. You're definitely gonna win. You leave, but you gotta listen to Rich Keefe.
And Shime Time.
Finna faint at the sea. Brief.
We should do this segment every day just so we can hear the open.
Yeah, I got no problem with that.
By
that
the way, why didn't get to? Yeah. By the way, open. Real quickly, one bit of news as we head into this. Megan Kolkman, producer for Channel 4 in Boston, tweeted out, charges officially dropped in Patriots owner Robert Kraft's prostitution case.
All right. I'll one-up you on the news front, Dale.
Nice.
According to Mike Reese, there is a black wrap and cast covering David Andrews' right thumb up to the wrist. He was absent yesterday, of course, but he did go through drills during the media access portion of practice today, although I feel like it might be difficult to snap the ball with a busted-up thumb. I don't know. So stay tuned for that.
He just
was there.
Need him back for Aaron Donald week. That's it.
That's a good point. He dominates Aaron Donald. So I don't know what that means, but he was on the field today at the very least. So there you go. Shime, how about this? This week, we will predict the perfect lineup for week 3.
That is correct.
And just to let everybody know, the week 2 perfect lineup would have looked like this. Dak Prescott as your quarterback. Aaron Jones and Alvin Kamara as your running backs. Calvin Ridley and Stephon Diggs as your wideouts. Tyler Higbee as your tight end.
Who would have thought?
Your flex, Darren Waller, who the Patriots will see this week.
Yep.
The kicker, Younghoe Koo, who the Patriots had on their practice squad. And the best defense special teams from last week was the Colts against Minnesota. All right, so let's predict week 3. The best quarterback, Shime. Who do we think is going to be the best
quarterback? So the best guy out here right now is a guy that we were talking about earlier for the MVP buzz. Mm-hmm. There's a couple really good matchups. We focused a lot on playing bad defenses. And this guy happens to be playing a pretty bad defense.
Yeah.
We're going to go with Kyler Murray, the quarterback of the Arizona Cardinals.
Oh, there's buzz already
MVP
about Murray.
Buzz.
Oh, a ton of buzz.
The Lions have sucked. They're going to continue to stink because they just don't want to play well, I guess.
And the hope is Detroit gets up by 10, 15 points.
Kyler Murray lights them up.
Scores three
straight
touchdowns.
And they just throw the ball all day.
Yes.
The Arizona Cardinals have scored I think they scored 28 in week one. They scored 30 last week. I expect him to score in the 30s again this week. We're going to ride with Kyler Murray at quarterback.
Matt Patricia is about to bring in his 75th former Patriot because apparently Jabal Sheard is about to sign there.
Oh, my God.
So that'll turn that defense around, won't it?
His days are numbered.
I'm not looking back. We're looking forward.
Yeah, you're looking forward to the free agent market.
Kyler Murray torching you. All right, we'll each pick a running back here. The running back I'm going with is rookie Jonathan Taylor out of Wisconsin, who had a big week last week. They actually gave him the ball a bunch. He went over 100 yards and scored a touchdown. So I think against the Jets this week, they're going to be up big. The Jets are a mess. They have even more injury problems on top of them being bad, and their coach is probably on their way out the door. So I think they're going to get a big lead. Might be part with Taylor, but then just to milk the clock after that, it's going to be a lot of Jonathan Taylor. So I look for him to have his second big week.
And then the other running back we're going to go with this week is Austin Eckler for the Chargers. Hasn't been tremendous through 2 weeks, but I expect him to kind of really surge this week.
Good amount of touches. Carolina. He's still like a big
factor.
He's
touching
there,
the ball.
Yeah.
And I think with Justin Herbert starting, it actually helps him a lot because I think it opens up the field more because Herbert's more apt to throw the ball probably than Tyrod Taylor would be, which will allow Eckler to receive out of the backfield better, get more yards after the catch. And Carolina's defense, as we've seen, has been very bad.
Wide receivers, this one's a no-brainer, and it ties in with our quarterback. And you could probably pick this guy every week. But DeAndre Hopkins, especially against Detroit, gets in the end zone last week. I just think he's the best receiver in the league anyway. Real life, fantasy, doesn't matter. So I'm all in on DeAndre Hopkins.
Did you guys see, by the way, real quickly, the NFL put out the receiving yards leaders after week two? And I was shocked that DeAndre Hopkins was fifth. He's got 219 receiving yards.
Yeah, but he's got more staying power than some of those guys on that list.
And fun fact about DeAndre Hopkins, he's currently on pace for 200 targets this year, which is more than Michael Thomas had last year in his record-breaking season.
So real quickly, Stephon Diggs is first with 239 yards.
Yep.
He's tied with Ridley of Atlanta. Julian Edelman is only 3 yards behind them with 236. And then Anderson of the Panthers and Hopkins of the Cardinals.
What a 180-yard day will do for you.
Yeah, Hopkins only had 68 yards in week two, but he did have a touchdown, whereas the week before he had 151. So, I mean, he's got to be a target catch yards machine, and he'll probably finish the year with close to 10 touchdowns, too.
And the other receiver we're going with this week is we're going to go with Amari Cooper in Dallas. We saw Dak Prescott literally throw the ball all over the yard on the Atlanta Falcons. The Seahawks, as we saw Cam Newton slice and dice in this week, their secondary, not great, especially when their safety is too busy blitzing all the time. So I kind of expect Dak Prescott to do the same thing. So we're going to go with Amari Cooper, who's been pretty good this year so far.
Tight end, let's go Mark Andrews playing the Monday night game, which should be a great game. Baltimore and Kansas City, this one could be pretty high scoring. Andrews is just solid, one of Lamar Jackson's favorite guys to throw to. Kansas City's defense, it's not the most impressive thing on their team by any means, so I think there's going to be a lot of points to be had, and give me Mark Andrews.
And then in our flex spot, we're going to go with Corey Davis, the receiver for the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, who I was down on, but
he's having a great year. Yeah. A.J. Brown's out injured.
That's the key.
And Tannehill has seemed like he wants to throw him the football. Last week, I had over 100 yards. I think even week one, he had close to 100 yards as well.
Yeah.
Has a touchdown in there. I think against this Minnesota defense, which we've all seen, again, terrible defenses. You'll notice a theme with our picks.
Right.
A lot of bad defenses here. And so that's why I kind of really like Corey Davis.
And speaking of defenses, our best defense of the week, we believe, will be the Chargers because they are facing the Carolina Panthers without Christian McCaffrey for an entire game. I just think they have no chance. No chance. And the Chargers look good against the Kansas City Chiefs.
If you can hold Patrick Mahomes in check, you can hold the Carolina Panthers in check without Christian McCaffrey.
All right, so there you go. We'll see how we did. And by the way, Shine, there is a game tonight, and I think you wouldn't normally hear, Jacksonville-Miami, Dale, and expect a lot of guys to be pretty good fantasy-wise, but you know what?
This is a great fantasy night.
There kind of is.
There's like three guys on either team at least.
Yeah.
You got basically every receiver for Jacksonville. You can even
I love
James Chenault. Robinson.
Chenault's the guy I like the most.
And Keelan Cole's been the red zone target there.
Yeah.
And then DJ Chark, always reliable. I might even consider starting Gardner Minshew if you have him, especially if you're streaming a quarterback.
I would. I think Minshew for sure.
For the Dolphins, Miles Gaskin has been getting a ton of touches.
Yep.
And then Devontae Parker and Mike Gesicki, who had a great week last week.
All right, the line for the game, so moving a little bit away from fantasy here for a second, is Jacksonville favored by 3. at home against Miami. Where are you leaning there?
So I lean Jacksonville. I don't think I'm going to bet that, though. I'm actually going to bet on the game total,
okay,
which right now is 48.5. I'm going over. The league average right now on points is about 50 points scored per game across the NFL. So that's every team, even the sucky ones. These two teams have bad defenses,
yes,
decent to pretty good offenses. Jacksonville's been very good. They've scored more than 30 points both games so far. I'm taking the Jaguars, or I'm taking the over 48.5.
I'm going to take the Jaguars -3. I think that's the play. I think Minshew's going to play pretty well to the point where they're going to wonder, or what the hell are we doing? Are we going to keep him? Are we still tanking for Lawrence? Or what do we do there? So I think they win. I also think Miami stinks.
Yeah, we did a pretty good job of you betting the actual line of the game, me betting the total on Monday. So we're going to keep that rolling.
Tag team it again.
All right, there's all your Keith's Fantasy Brief picks and the Thursday Night Football pick as well. We'll talk Patriots when we come back. It's Dale and Keith, Sports Radio WEEI.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.